Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
What's Mercedes Moné gonna do? Moné is gonna talk. I'm Ollie Davis. I've just been joined by Tempest, who wasn't off screen fixing technical issues and stuff.
The people that normally would do this are not in the office today.
It was just like a cool entrance.
Well, hey, the Gunther's music or Walter's music. It's the one that people use these days, yeah. I hear.
Or like a sitcom, just canned applause.
Bow, bop, down, bop, 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 bop.
If you haven't already, please press the thumbs up button, give us a subscribe down below, leave a comment with what you thought of this episode of AEW Dynamite, and send in your Omega chats to wrestletalk.com/support. We'll read out every single one of them over $5 while we review AEW Dynamite and our main talking point with we do like to chuckle because it's a good thumbnail, isn't it?
It's a good pun.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love a good pun?
Because that's literally what she did.
Yeah.
Her name's Mercedes Moné.
Mm-hmm.
And on this episode, like last week's episode, but the previous week she got physical. Did she get physical last week? I think she just did the promo, went backstage.
Well, she nearly got jumped.
That's it.
Twice. And then turned around and caught Willow, mm-hmm, just before the nicest person in the world would maybe stab someone in the back. Would she have? I don't know. But we are still waiting for that proper... I mean, she did hit her finish, bankrupt. Mm-hmm. But that's about it in terms of the physicality from Mercedes Moné. Now, I think we may have not necessarily differing opinions on it, but differing views on how important this decision they've made has been thus far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Mercedes came in and AEW really seemed to have taken what worked with CM Punk and just gone, okay, we'll do that with Mercedes. Similar star level power.
The worst kept secret debut.
Yeah. And then what did Punk do in his first week? So I feel like he had an actual match at the pay-per-view 3 weeks.
Yeah, later. His first show was the August 20th, 2021 Rampage.
Yeah.
And then his first match was, of course, the Darby Allin match at All Out. And the weeks after that were him coming out on Dynamite for a promo with Tony Schiavone, where he alludes to Bryan Danielson coming in and says, you might have to wait a little longer for that one. And then after that, I think he maybe did commentary on one show. And then he went face-to-face with Darby as the closing angle for that that go-home show for Dynamite. But there was no real... It was about as much physicality and everything as we have seen from Mercedes Moné so far. The difference, of course, being that we were maybe 3 weeks out from a pay-per-view at that point.
Yeah.
Whereas here, Mercedes shows up with like 6 or 7 weeks before the next pay-per-view, which I don't know if that's going to be the site of her first match. If it is, that's a bit of a wait to get there. And the person you would kind of assume would be her first opponent seems otherwise occupied now.
Yeah, because the other difference I would say is Punk, I think you can put out on the mic and do a lot of mic building segments because he's CM Punk and he can talk. And I would say if Mercedes was a heel, I think she could get away with similar style promos for a bit. Not to the extent of Punk, but I really enjoy old Sasha Banks heel promos in NXT. So what they've done instead is put her out as a babyface. She's had quite a lot of promo work. On this episode, all she did was be on special guest commentary on the Willow Nightingale, Anna Jay, Chris Statlander, Sky Blue number one contendership match for the TBS title shot at Dynasty. Dynasty? Who knows? And yet, it's just, I don't think it's a draw. I don't think it's getting across this character well enough. It is providing some actual proper attention on the women's division.
Uh-huh.
And I don't mean attention from us fans. I mean attention from AEW as a company, which is good. But I just feel like it's not clicked in the way... I feel like I'm waiting for it to click,
uh-huh,
as opposed to for it clicking right out the gate.
And I think that's fair. I do think, obviously, there has been a lot of, you know, comparisons made between Mercedes's arrival and CM Punk's arrival, given that the manner in which they've come in has been very similar. But a lot of people said the same sort of things about CM Punk's arrival back in 2021, mm-hmm, when it was like, oh, he's just coming out and kind of saying hi to everybody. He's so happy to be here.
I loved it.
And it wasn't until, like, the Eddie Kingston promo where he finally, like, sunk his teeth into something. And I kind of feel the same way about this, where, similar again to the CM Punk deal, we do have two other massive stars that have come in at the same time to kind of take a little bit of that spotlight, not in the sense that they're stealing it from Mercedes Moné, but that... she's not the only new character on the show. Mm. She's not the only thing that needs to feel important right now. Because we, of course, have Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay, who are both now entering the company and both now doing so with different approaches being done by the company. Will Ospreay's like the attraction. Come see his great matches. Okada's getting over a new character. And Mercedes Moné, the big deal is that she's there. Again, very similar to CM Punk's return in that it was the big deal that he was back in wrestling. It's the big deal that Mercedes is in AEW. And I don't know how long of a shelf life that has, because again, it was only a few weeks when Punk did it. And you, how excited everybody was when CM Punk showed up in AEW. It still only took a few weeks before people were like, all right, but what are you doing though? And I think my bigger problem with Mercedes' first few weeks is sort of the direction they've put her on, where I don't have much of a problem with her going after Willow Nightingale, because I think that's a logical first opponent given her injury last year. And I like how they've set that up with some of the backstage deals where she was very cordial with Chris Statlander last week, but very cold towards Willow. I like the content of this rivalry so far, but I am very curious that it seems we're putting Mercedes in the TBS championship picture and that idea as a whole. Whether we end up with her with the belt, I have no idea. There's still a million different ways we can go, but this first few weeks has been, it's been fine, I think. With somebody like Mercedes Moné, you want it to be a smash hit, home run, grand slam, 10 out of 10, everything. And I don't think it has been that. I don't think it's been terrible, you know, by any means.
No, it's not been terrible.
But it does kind of just feel like it's fine and we're waiting for it to be the 10 out of 10.
When are we going to get to the fireworks factory?
Well, yes, exactly.
Simpsons.
It is a Simpsons. Yeah, yeah.
Did a Simpsons.
They never get to the fireworks factory.
So, well, we know kind of where they're going. You said the TBS title picture. That's where she's been interacting in that sort of TBS universe of Statlander, Nightingale, Sky Blue, and Julia Hart. So I'm coming to you for this. I thought it was a decent match. I thought they worked together.
Really good match,
yeah,
honestly.
Really well. And Statlander and Willow, I thought we were going to get the moment where, okay, we acknowledge we're going to have to fight. We're going to have a respectful friendship fight now. But then I appreciated that they didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of got distracted by other things. Chris not had it won, but she certainly hit the move, then got dragged out. But Willow comes in, Dr. Bomb on, Anna Jay, I think it was.
Yep.
And Willow wins. And that's when Julia Hart appears, attacks Willow Nightingale, and then poses looking at Mercedes. So then you've got like a stare down.
Mm-hmm.
In the ring to outside the ring. So you've got three, it feels like they are positioning three people. You've got Julia Hart and Willow Nightingale, of course, now wrestling at Dynasty in 5 weeks?
I think it's something like that. It's like April 21st, I believe the show is. So whatever that is from now.
So then you've got this Mercedes thing that's circling around the side of that. And maybe there's a bit of Chris Statlander as well, because they have put a lot of time into the Stokely Hathaway triangle dynamic there. I feel like the fireworks factory for me is Mercedes wins the TBS title as a heel, maybe screwing over Willow in the process, and then we just get to do NXT Bayley versus NXT Sasha Banks again. Yeah. Willow Nightingale is like the heir apparent to NXT Bayley.
Just the happiest person in the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring out the tall boys.
Sure.
Do you know what that is?
I do. I heard you having this conversation yesterday. It's the wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube men.
They're not called that, apparently. They're called tall boys.
Tall boy is a large beer where I come from.
I'll have five tall boys, please.
Yeah.
See all those tall boys out on your green?
Yeah.
So that's what I would get to. And then, you know, maybe Julia Hart and Chris Statlander can have a secondary feud. Mm. And then that's your TBS title picture. You've got four women there.
Yeah.
What would you do?
It's interesting because, like I said, Willow was being set up to be, you know, by all accounts, Mercedes' first match. And now it's looking more like that's going to be Mercedes' first program and not necessarily the first match, unless they do the first match on TV before Dynasty, which I wouldn't be opposed by, but either way, I don't think they're doing that specific match. I think that they could do Mercedes versus Chris Statlander at Dynasty.
Yeah, yeah.
And just have them go out and have a really strong match. Chris Statlander recently lost to Riho, so she's kind of the one that's able to take some of the pins right now, that I don't think it hurts her too much to go in there and just have a great match and lose. And if she wins, Mercedes that is, and Willow wins, which I would assume is going to happen at Dynasty, I think that does nicely transition to the TBS championship picture that we are apparently heading towards. I do think the money, or the mode, is in Mercedes as a heel, obviously. She was a heel in New Japan, was absolutely out of her mind and very good and effective at that role. And I think her greatest work in WWE always came as a heel. I think we have been looking at a women's division that's been struggling at times with their lack of a top babyface because Toni Storm is the top babyface and that everybody loves her, but she is still being positioned as a heel and wrestling people like Deonna Purrazzo, who, while very good, aren't getting the same sort of reaction. So I think if you then embrace that, turn Toni Storm all the way babyface, and then eventually position Mercedes Moné as a heel, you then have two really big, powerful personalities atop this women's division that I think can play off of each other very well. I don't know how long I'd want Mercedes in the TBS championship picture, because she's the women's world champion, and I think that is sort of where you'd want to position her. Ultimately, I think that's where you position her. Maybe it's just that they have other plans for the summer and Wembley and such, but I would like to see her as a heel eventually going against Toni Storm. When that happens, I have no idea, but in the near future, give me a match with Chris Statlander.
I feel like one of Tony Khan's ideas for this year is, I'm just going to make all the championships the world championship, apart from yours, Roderick Strong.
Yeah.
So, Okada is the triple, whatever it's called, continental champion.
It's not a triple crown anymore.
Yeah. Edge, he's your TNT champion.
Mm-hmm.
They're world champion level people.
Yeah.
And then if Mercedes becomes a TBS champion, it is like, oh, you've just got two world champion level titles there. I think Jamie Hayter as well, when she's ready to return, she's someone you can throw in that mix of Toni Storm and Mercedes. I guess the key is Sasha or Mercedes as a face. Doesn't do anything for me, particularly on promos, but great wrestler in the ring.
Yeah.
So let's at least fast track Mercedes wrestling in the ring to make that connection with the fans.
Yeah.
Because you can put her in there with Rio, with Statlander, like you said. You don't have to wait to Dynasty. Mm-hmm. In an ideal world, you would. First pay-per-view match. You've got to think, how does this relate to her character as well? Do you know she's the CEO?
Really? They hadn't mentioned it. Yeah. It's been very subtle.
But I don't know what that means in a wrestling context. Like, you just keep on shouting CEO at me. I'm like, what does... As a character, how does that translate? Are you a prize fighter then? Mm. Do you try and make more money for the promotion by putting your big fights on TV? I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's just that she wants to be called a boss, but that can't be done anymore because being a boss is cool. Mm. No, I hear what you're saying, and I do agree with a lot of it. I think they need like a Quake by the Lake situation, like a big TV special between now and Dynasty if they're going to have that sort of match. Maybe it's just the main event of a good Dynamite,
yeah,
you know, and you don't need the extra branding or something like that. But yeah, I would have her wrestle sooner than later. I don't know if it waits until Dynasty. I think any of the, you know, various Joshi wrestlers would make a very good first opponent as well, whether it's Riho, Hikaru Shida, although she's doing stuff in Ring of Honor right now. There's loads of options, and they're all going to make for really good matches. So I'd like to get to the good part. Get to the fireworks factory.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's see what you all think on the Omega chats. Booking like a Mark says, I'm doubling down, like Ollie with the pipe bomb pole. No, I'm not doubling down. I'm just...
giving you another chance.
Unfortunately, well, you know what it is. And it's unfortunately ironic. The numbers did lie.
Ah.
And there's bots. So...
it's a disaster for those bots.
Yeah. So obviously, like, it must have happened on Patreon. So I thought, open it up to a larger audience with the YouTube poll. We'll get a try and fix this bots issue. It's a shame. So they, Booking Like a Mark says, last week I asked if Mercedes will win the TBS title on the May 4th collision.
Ah,
AKA
that's fun.
Star Wars Day. Now I'm going farther. Willow will win the title at Dynasty, then drop it to Mercedes on collision. I like that.
Yeah.
Although
that's
you
fun.
Do pay off the Willow got her title win. I would like that to happen.
Yeah, I would also really like Willow to be able to have her own moment as well and not be just sort of a transitional champion then. But it's May 4th. That's fun. I like that.
What do you call that special?
Oh,
Collision.
Gosh.
The Collision Strikes Back.
Yeah.
CEO Strikes Back. Return of the CEO.
Return of the CEO.
Revenge of the CEO.
Yeah,
the CEO
that's probably
awakens.
The best one. Yeah.
What's the last CEO?
What's her character name? Oh, gosh. I haven't watched Mandalorian in such a long time. I don't know. We could come back to it. But I like the idea.
It's one of the Bilbos, isn't it?
Something like
that.
Is
that Star Wars? Andrew Doctree says member for 30 months. He doesn't say member for 30 months. That's what he is. I like that Monet seems to be more intent on helping build the mid-card scene in the women's division instead of immediately going after Toni Storm. I don't think that's her character or backstage intent. I just think Toni Khan, that's the way he books, isn't it?
Yeah. Like you said, though, like, I didn't quite know how to respond to all of the different champions being held by, like, top main event people. But, you know, people always say, like, the wrestler makes the title. And when you look back at the last few years, my God, of the TNT Championship, the last 6 to 9 months of the TNT Championship has really shown that having really top, you know, high quality champions does a lot. I know that's a news flash, but when you look at the wide array of champions they've got in AEW right now, I can believe that they're all champions. If Mercedes is the next one to join that list, like, it, I don't think the TBS championship needs like a ton of help, but it would get it. You know, she'd do a lot for it.
Matt Hennessy has got three in a row here. This was a banger of a show. Ospreay and AEW fit perfectly together. The Bucks continue doing great work, and Swerve versus Konosuke delivered. But man, this Mercedes babyface run ain't working. She comes across really bland, and while I think she's a great wrestler, she was never a great talker on the mic. She needs to find an edge, and soon hoping she does, man. I understand Best Friends beat an Undisputed Kingdom. The UK feel like an incompetent group. Obviously not the country. They are the AEW's version of the core. Oh.
Wow.
Oh.
That's the most cutting thing I've heard in a minute.
You give a mid-card and pair of tag titles and still treat them like a joke. I gave AEW leeway on them at first because of Cole's injury, but when you're booking the group badly, I've just got to call it out. Thank God Kyle ain't joining this group. Also, Hook being put in the Jericho mid-card vortex sucks.
Sure does.
Yeah, we'll pick up on a few of those points later. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Jay Will says, hello, WrestleTalk folk. I think Mercedes Moné will be aligned with Willow Nightingale in a swerve angle at either the pay-per-view or not long after. Setting up Willow and Chris for the TBS title. Chris is seen as the weak link in the crew, and Moné will soon face Toni. So Mercedes will turn on Nightingale?
Maybe eventually. I think they're positioning a baby Willow heel turn by the sounds of this, but I don't want that. I don't know how you break up Willow and Chris without there being a heel, you know, turn somewhere. Stokely obviously probably plays a lot into that, and Chris has obviously done a lot more of the siding with Stokely than Willow has. So I would think maybe Willow is the baby face and Chris is the heel in that scenario. But I don't know how that then applies to Mercedes joining one side or the other.
Well, I hadn't thought about it until this chat. Stokely and Mercedes. That feels right.
I don't know whatever happened to the Stokely and Jade pairing.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was excellent stuff. And then they just kind of disappeared from one another. If you want to then take this guy and put him with the new top star of the women's division,
yeah,
I don't think that's a bad idea.
And it perfectly furthers the feud with Willow. And then Chris feels sort of caught in the middle. Mm. Her friend or this new faction where she's getting wins.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Jimmy G says, member for 30 months. Thank you. Ollie was so upset with the poll, he has made likes disappear. But again, there's a bot thing there, so that's why we're doing it. Women's match was fun. Ospreay and Swerve were so good. Can't wait for Dynasty. 4 out of 5 show. Space Viking says, I'd like to think that at the pay-per-view, Sasha will wrestle Statlander on pay-per-view as a tease for the Willow match. I guess that means that Toni Storm wouldn't have a match because 3 women's matches, Toni Khan. Lol. P.S. It's pronounced Space Viking. Space Viking, all in caps. P.S. It's pronounced Space Viking, not Space Viking. Yeah, I think Statlander versus Mercedes would, and it would also be a good match.
Yes.
And finally for now, Jock Will J. To clarify, I mean Willow and Monet will be a heel team along with Stokely. I can't see why Mercedes won't be in the main title picture in the next couple of months. Hayter versus Monet at Wembley is what they'll likely want. I like Tony, but she's not Monet. I don't like the idea of Willow turning heel.
No, it's the sort of thing. I mean, granted, nobody thought that Bayley would ever work as a heel either, mm-hmm. and she did. But I want to see the best babyface be the best babyface.
Yeah.
And Willow is just one of the most likable, charismatic, positive, happy-go-looking babyfaces you will ever find in pro wrestling.
We just had another one from Matt Hennessy from earlier as well. This was a good show, and AEW has restored the feeling, but there are certain talents and their respective runs that I'm genuinely worried about. Yeah, I know what you mean. We'll probably get to those. So keep getting those chats in, wrestletalk.com/support for the Omega chats. We'll read out every single one over $5 while we do the play-by-play of this show, a show that was all wrestling matches.
Yeah. I like those.
I felt like, what's different about this episode 3/4 of the way through? And then it twigged with me. There's no talking segments.
Yeah.
And really, in the matches themselves, there weren't any angles.
No, it was very much a series of what I like to call totem pole matches, where you do get a sense of just where everyone is on the various pecking orders in their various divisions. And I think you got that with Will Ospreay and Katsuyori Shibata, which isn't a shock to anybody. Will Ospreay is going to be right at the top of that totem pole. But it happened kind of throughout the show where you really got a sense, just through these matches, where people are going, where they kind of lie with one another. And given that most of these were either number one contenders matches or tournament matches, I think that's a pretty good thing.
What do you know what I call it?
What's that?
Collision.
I like collision.
Oh, I like collision as well. I just, hopefully it's not a weekly thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate it in a time when WWE is doing so many long in-ring talking segments.
Yeah. You know what it might be? Because I don't know how much people, I don't know how much Tony is online. I know it's a lot, but I don't know who he's listening to or whatnot. But I saw a lot of people saying last week that Dynamite felt like a WWE show, just in the sense that like a lot of Mercedes' segments have felt very WWE-like, and the main event was like, it had a WWE finish and such. It was a much more sports entertainment I quit match than maybe we would have seen in AEW previously. And I don't know if they maybe have just heard that and tried to go all the way the opposite direction for a week.
I think Tony's more thick-skinned than that.
Just a theory.
But you see the tweet.
I did see his tweet to Eric Bischoff. Yeah.
Eric Bischoff's podcast with John Alba on the wrestling business is announced it was wrapping up. And John Alba, who's a lovely bloke.
Nice guy.
He sort of got caught in the friendly fire.
Crossfire.
Said this, like, Eric's very busy, so this is going to come to an end. And Tony just tweeted something like,
it's a good thing this is ending before AEW's next negotiation.
Yeah, yeah. And just the reply's like, Tony, it's 4 a.m.
That's when he does his best work.
So yeah, this show opened with Will Ospreay versus Shibata, and although there were loads of wrestling matches on this, and we didn't have any of the in-ring promo bits that I did personally miss, but I don't mind it because they had a lot of video packages or clips to tell those stories. That whole idea that AEW doesn't tell stories, that criticism does not hold up on this episode.
No,
because Ospreay's coming out, Shibata comes out, and they play footage from New Japan 7 years ago telling that story, the last time they met, and how both guys' careers are totally different now.
Yep. It's really, really... It's the complete opposite of what wrestling fans kind of became accustomed to for such a long time, where if you saw, pick two guys that had wrestled on the indies and then they wrestled on the main roster, it's that never happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this is, we will pull every bit of archival footage we can to make the most complete story possible for these guys. And it's just so refreshing. It's one of those things that I really do appreciate. And WWE's doing it now, too. You know, there's a lot more of the world around us being bigger than there used to be. I'm very glad that we work and live in this era where we can acknowledge those things. Because I do think it just leads to better stories. And it means we get to see tiny, skinny little Will Ospreay, who's a junior, getting absolutely demolished by Katsuyori Shibata. And God, I love that match. And I love this one, too. You know, I can't say enough good things about Will Ospreay. You know, he's... I was having a conversation with some friends of mine last night because I watched like the first hour and a bit of this live just because I was up, and we've only got this last week before the clocks change again and all of a sudden these shows start happening at 1 a.m. instead of midnight. So I was watching it and my friend was just saying like, God, this guy doesn't have a bad match, does he? And I was like, no, he does not. And we were going back and forth and he says, would you compare his in-ring quality to like Peak Omega or Peak Okada? And I was like, yeah, I would. Honestly, it's different because, you know, a lot of their career trajectories and all that have been different. But you will not find anybody in wrestling right now who has a higher average quality wrestling match than this guy. And he can do it in the main event. He can do it in the opener. It doesn't matter. He's just going to go out there and have the best match on the show. I think that's a really good thing to have on your roster.
And the frequency of it as well. Yeah. It's not like, Okada in that time was wrestling intermittently in singles matches at least.
Sure.
Ospreay's doing it every couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I think if it was up to him, he'd do it twice a week.
Probably.
And he can do so many different styles as well. Like, obviously, you can wrestle a Will Ospreay match. That's what we got with Carl Fletcher. Because Fletcher is proto-Will Ospreay.
Yep.
But then he is so experienced and adaptable to work in lucha, doing the British style, or doing, obviously, strong style Japanese work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he can work and do the best match of these different disciplines as well. So when he has to have a match against Shibata, who has his own style, and then some, because there's the limitations around the cerebral hematoma.
So, yeah, that's about right. Just
remembered what it was, the head injury he suffered.
Took his brain out of his head.
He can do it, and it's still an excellent match.
I always thought that when Will Ospreay was a junior and transitioning into being a heavyweight, that he's still going to have these great matches, but there's a real possibility that you will lose some of what makes Will Ospreay special. You know, because he was kind of like, it was like him and Ricochet. And if you took away that, like, Ricochet's flips and such, he would probably lose some of what he was if he would be able to adapt. Who knows? But when Will Ospreay transitioned to being a heavyweight, I was worried that we were going to lose some of what made Will special. And here's a comparison for you. There's a WWE DVD that they put out like years and years and years ago where they were talking about like the top 50 superstars of all time. And during that, they bring up Randy Orton. And this is in maybe like 09 or 2010 or something. And John Cena says, in a decade, they'll make another one of these and you'll see how much more Randy Orton has to like to go and how much better he'll get. And then I watched the next decade and I went, no, I think Randy Orton was kind of best around that time, right? And he was a young guy, but had lots of runway left. But I didn't really ever feel like evolved necessarily as a wrestler. And I had the similar feeling with Will Ospreay 4 or 5 years ago when he was transitioning to heavyweight. And he's just gotten better and better and better. And it's not just the moves. It's how he does them. It's all the styles that he can wrestle. It's the stories he can tell in the ring. And he's gotten so much better to the point that I think we will look back on this time 10 years from now and be like, we didn't even know how good Will Ospreay could be. And that's a really interesting and scary thing to think about.
Yeah, I can't imagine how much better he can get. But then again, 7 years ago, I was also like, well, he can't flip anymore. There's no more flips he can do on top of those flips.
Triple moonsault comes next.
So this match started with what I thought was Will staying away from the head. And then by the end, he was kicking Shibata in the face.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it was really safe. I'm sure it was like expertly precision done.
Yeah.
But yeah, it felt like they were having a wrestling match with no physical limitations by the end,
mm-hmm.
which is remarkable. Seeing that when Shibata first started wrestling, even when he just got in the ring and took the bump in New Japan,
yeah,
I was like, he's going to die.
I was just like, oh, God, you clench up.
And here I am, actually at one point, getting dropped on his neck in, what was it? It was like a driver. And getting taken hidden blades and stuff to the head, which is probably here, I guess, or here.
They're good workers, these guys. Yeah, it's scary, but it's amazing what these guys are able to pull off together. And like, if you're going to trust anybody to take care of you like that, I would trust Will Ospreay with my life in the ring.
It makes you think, like, what match could I have with Will Ospreay?
I think that a lot. I was like, could I get like a 3-star match in the ring if you went in there with Ospreay? It'd be the worst match he'd ever had.
Yeah.
But
you'd like, I think a broom would be better than me, because at least like Will can have total control over the broom.
Sure.
But if I think he could at least get a 4-star match out of a broom.
Yeah.
Maybe even a 5-star. But yeah, 3. That'd be good. Maybe I'll ask him. Loads of cool spots. Shibata kicking out at one off an Oscar. Will like doing a bouncing kip up thing, which I'm still not sure how he did. But in the end, Hidden Blade, the elbow was down. And they had a show of respect afterwards where they sat down and acknowledged each other. Very nice.
Very good. Very good stuff. I like that we are getting to see more of Shibata on AEW and not just being, you know, on Ring of Honor like he had been when he first came in. I still think, and I don't know if I've said this on a podcast or if I was just saying to people in the office and such, I think there's a lot they could do with a rematch between Shibata and Okada.
And oh my God.
I don't know, obviously, like there's Okada and Omega and things that they are very clearly cooking up for the future. I don't know which of those things takes place at Wembley, but I would have Okada and Shibata be like a hugely personal thing. I don't know how they would do it exactly, but there's the story there. And I think you need to start heating up Shibata, giving him some wins. Because most of the time he goes out there and has amazing matches with Danielson, you know, Ospreay and whoever else. But he doesn't often win those matches on AEW. I'd like to see him win some matches and then go after Okada in the Continental Championship.
Well, this was because Shibata had lost to Bryan Danielson and now Ospreay's beaten him too. It's building the Danielson-Ospreay match.
Yeah.
We got a video package sort of just profiling Danielson afterwards, which was really effective, I thought. And it had loads of clips from Ring of Honor and New Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says at just some point, and then it was all taken away from me. And then he comes back in AEW. And I'm like, that was really well done. That makes me think that you were only ever American Dragon Bryan Danielson.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that there was like a 12-year gap in the middle of all of that.
Renee Paquette's backstage with the Jacksons. Nick is disappointed that it's not Alex Marvez, because Marvez is more pretty. And they talk about retiring Sting. They've restructured the Elite. Now they're going to beat Private Party. And then Matthew said, "You're great. Honestly, great job, Renee. But, you know, just maybe try smiling a bit more."
Such a dick. I thought this was so fantastic.
That's a Vince McMahon, a Voldemort line, of course. Okada arrives in a sports car. Definitely that night.
Yeah.
That definitely happened live, not a pre-tape. Okada arrived and he watched it from backstage, but we never saw him.
I think that's his car.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. I don't know if it's the same one, but I watched an Okada documentary on New Japan World like a few years ago during the pandemic. And he was talking about how like, no, I am the best pro wrestler and thus I will live and act like it. And he was just driving around in a Ferrari and like wearing nice suits. And I was like, this guy's my world champion. This guy's like modern day Ric Flair buying his own limo and living large and such. And he's like, this is part of the job. I got to keep up the appearances and everything. So I would not be surprised if that's his car.
That is cool. Just logistically, he's still living in Japan.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And,
yeah.
And he'd have to drive his car up to Canada to
get another one.
He's got he's got a car in every.
Yeah.
It's gone to the 80s when you'd have a woman in every town. You've got a sports
you
car.
You
got to
have a sports
town.
Car in every town.
So this led into the Jacksons taking on Private Party. So weird calling them the Jacksons. This was awesome.
This was
really
good.
So Nicholas fights, was it Quen? Yeah, Mark Quen onto the barricade early. They're just balancing on the barricade, which is impressive enough as it is. And then Nicholas somehow has the balance and core strength to get a suplex on Quen on the barricade. And I thought, wow, they're going to fall backwards. That's a bump. Mm-hmm. Turns it into a Falcon Arrow.
Yep.
And then the crowd just went, yeah, that's awesome. And everyone was into the match for the rest of the match. Of course, Private Party famously beat Young Bucks in like the second ever episode of Dynamite.
Yeah.
One of the more awesome upset wins in
AEW. Back when the Elite refused to beat anybody. They weren't going to be the management guys that beat all the talent.
And then, they've got excellent chemistry. The heat was awesome for it. And they're going back and forth. There's a load of cheating because the Jacksons are trying to cheat. But Caster uses the belt on Matthew, I think it was. And ultimately, Quen misses his 630 senton. And they go for the EVP trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And Nicholas just slips.
Yeah.
Matt hits his knee. And then they make the pin a bit confused. And it's like, okay, they won.
Yeah. I got the sense that Nick couldn't remember if he was the legal man or not. Because Matt kind of like goes for the cover. And he's like, come here. I think it's you. I think it's you.
They both pinned it.
Yeah. And they tried to do the EVP trigger, but both of them to the back. So they weren't like sandwiching Quen. And I don't know what happened. I think one of them just fell down.
It looked like silly string.
A little bit.
A Private Party move.
I really like that they did the finish to that previous match. They did the finish. Where they're going for, you know, the Tony Khan driver, as it's now known. And one of them, the Private Party guy, slips down, rolls him up, while the other one grabs hold of the leg and keeps the Jackson from jumping. But they kicked out, of course, this time. I thought it was a real nice little callback. Mm. I like that they can do that, you know, they tell the story on commentary and backstage and whatnot, but then actually seeing it play into the match itself, I think is a very nice little touch.
Even with the botch at the end, I still think it works with this goofy corporate gimmick, because it did kind of remind me of Voldemort at the end of the Rumble.
Yeah.
And because for a moment I thought, oh my God, he's twist his ankle or he's injured or something.
Yeah.
And then they just stayed down. They were like walking over on their knees. They didn't stand up and try it again. So I thought, are they doing the Vince McMahon bit where he can't stand up?
Yeah.
But the Young Bucks advance in the tag tournament. That was a quarterfinal. Takeshita video package. It's awesome. Mercedes arrives in a car backstage. Darby Allin was going to climb Mount Everest to raise money for the Tony Hawk skating park charity. But because he's broken his foot, Tony Khan let him just do a little promo spot here for that.
I said this on Twitter. I don't think there are many more universally beloved people than Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
He just appeals to the good nature in every one of us through the awesome radicalness of skateboarding.
Rene is backstage with Chris Jericho and Hook. And Jericho set this up last week after Hook beat him. He's got a proposition for him. I was like, okay, I see where this is going. They're going to form a tag team, enter the tag team tournament. There was still a wild card spot available, I think. And Jericho's proposition that's done backstage, I can give you some advice.
My God, man. I am really sorry for Hook. He's sucked into this vortex now. Mm. Like, sorry, buddy, it's over for you. And he wants to be properly latched to your hip. You're stuck here for a few months at least. This isn't going to be a quick one.
So Hook goes, yeah, that makes sense. 35 years of experience, but I also know who you are. Like, I've got my eyes open if you try and betray me. Just performance-wise, Jericho's saying this. He seems disinterested in this storyline.
Yeah, I feel like this has been the last four or five of Jericho's little deals here, whether he's talking about Atlantis Jr. and I wrestled your dad, or Hook that I want to wrestle you or whatnot. It's all the same thing. And he's just kind of like, yeah, you know, Renee, I'm happy to be here, you know. God, I'm so over it.
I feel like he's a bit creatively tapped out. And it's a shame because, you know, even though I'm not into the idea of Jericho and Hook partnering, if Jericho is doing his usual charismatic performance, which always tends towards a bit more heelish, but mm-hmm. I think that's okay, I would have at least enjoyed it as a piece of TV.
Sure.
But I just thought, yeah.
Soft-spoken, bored Chris Jericho does nothing for nobody.
Then we got the women's match, which we've already covered.
Very good.
Then we had Dustin Rhodes backstage setting up a match for Rampage against The Butcher.
This felt like a match that didn't need a backstage segment to set it up. Yeah. They could have just said, yeah, it's going to be Dustin versus The Butcher on Rampage. And I would have gone like, all right, cool.
Could have been an email.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, but Butcher did 2 minutes, but apparently his mustache stinks.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. At least we got that. They had another Turner Classic Movies skit with Tony Storm. Ben Mankiewicz is how you say his name. He wouldn't say tits out, which was funny. Yeah. It was very well performed. Very well
I
done.
Like someone having a dry wit to pair with the wackiness of Tony Storm. I think we need a bit more of that.
Video package on Swerve. This is when I realized there's been no in-ring segments. Then we got Best Friends versus Undisputed Kingdom. So Taven and Bennett versus Cassidy and Trent because Chucky's out injured. And I love Taven and Bennett wrestling as singles wrestlers, as a tag team. I just like their act, always have done. And this was a decent match. It was another tag team tournament quarterfinal. But then Strong tries to interfere. Chuck Taylor stops him. And the Best Friends win.
Yep. Don't know about this one. Not even that, like, I've thought that the Best Friends and their act probably should win a tag title at some point. Just because, my God, they've been there for 5 years and have never really done anything. But, oof, if you're trying to get me to care about this Undisputed Kingdom, I don't know what you're doing. I did like at the start of this match when Orange Cassidy just gets in the ring, walks across, and decks Matt Taven. Because I like that there is something there that they can carry forward from their little street fight deal from a few weeks ago that Orange Cassidy just doesn't like this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got some sort of like destined to do this now thing where it's on site. I liked that. But I'm looking for things to care about with this group, and they're just not there. Maybe I'd care more if Adam Cole wasn't hurt and you could do something, but even still, MJF is hurt. And these guys are all bound together by their hatred of MJF, who's not there. I don't know what to do with them now. And you could just have Roddy Strong go out there and have amazing matches every week like Orange Cassidy was doing. And I would care more just because I like Roddy, but there's not much else here.
Yeah, totally agree. Luke always brings up that the Acclaimed and Bullet Club Gold got together to fight off the Undisputed Kingdom and then never had that match or feud.
It's so bizarre.
So you did have something for them to do.
Yeah.
They're going to face the Jacksons, the Best Friends. So that makes sense that you want the Best Friends to advance there. And that's, you know, that's a sort of long-running dynamic as well. But then don't book the Undisputed Kingdom in this spot.
They're Ring of Honor tag champions. Why are they even in this tournament?
The last week's episode had Adam Cole in his country manor cutting a promo about how Wardlow's job now is to make sure that these guys are protected, that Taven, Bennett, and Strong are protected. So when this was kicking off and Strong was stopped from interfering, I thought, oh, okay, Wardlow comes out, lays everyone out. But no, not that either. So Wardlow lost clean a couple of weeks ago, like cutting off that whole, that was the only real credible thing they had going for it outside of the MJF storyline. And now they've just lost here. I get Strong's got the TNT championship, but with Okada and Edge winning these belts, he's like
international championship.
Oh, what did I say?
TNT.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it was in the news
as well. He's like the fourth most important men's singles champion now.
Yeah.
When that belt was kind of the second most important off the Cassidy Moxley run. And Phoenix for a bit.
Yeah,
that's a survival series.
That is. Next time we do all the AEW championships, we'll see how many people remember Rey Fénix.
So yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't understand. I think I can't see how they come back.
It's they are kind of damaged goods now. A weak first impression has gone on way, way too long, and I can't even call it a first impression now because it's been like 3 months.
Yeah. They were set up at the end of last year as the biggest heel threat to the company.
Yeah.
Massive opportunity wasted. The Jacksons, however, are fantastic. They came out to stare down the best friends, and then they took the Cody Vader down, but it wasn't going down fast enough, so they started to squat to disappear from view.
I love Taz on commentary just being like, you know how expensive that thing is? Look at these guys.
They're still
doing it.
Still having to gimmick it.
Yeah.
Even if that wasn't intentional, this is just all building this goofy but threatening, credible heel act.
Yeah.
They can do no wrong at the moment.
They're going to win Gimmick of the Year in the Observer, and they deserve every bit of it.
Renee's backstage with Kyle O'Reilly. He's happy to have beaten Brian Keith. He says he doesn't need the Undisputed Kingdom right now.
Smart man.
Edge TNT title recap. That is the correct belt.
Yep.
That was a nice video package.
Yeah.
Good promo as well. Talks about when people get into this business. Last week was the night you dream about having. I thought really well done. And the cope opened.
No, don't feel bad. That's what Excalibur said too.
Did he say that as
he
well?
He said the cope opened. But yes, the cope open returns with his first title defense. Because they did make a point to say that this Christian deal is now behind him. Mm. That's done. We'll see, but in Edge's words, or Copeland's words, pardon me, it is done. On to new things.
In Oakland's words. That starts on Collision. And the main event was Strickland versus Takeshita, which was the sort of number one contendership for Samoa Joe's world title. And I moved the time bar on my screen. It was 23 minutes left. Okay.
Yeah, good. We got time good. For a great main event. And sure enough, that's what we got.
But even then I was like, oh, okay, but there's going to be like a 5-10 minute angle at the end.
Sure.
No angles on this show. So yeah, it was just a great match. That's it. I've written it here. I thought Hangman was returning.
I see.
Thought Hangman was going to come in and stop and cost Swerve the match.
Wow. Yeah.
Which I don't know if I would have done, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I did have the thought during this match, I was like, I wonder, and there's still a lot of time left, and I'm still entirely invested in seeing Swerve become champion. I will be very interested to see how this feud with Samoa Joe and presumably Swerve's immediate title run afterwards, should he win, I wonder how much he has to do without Hangman's ever-present hatred fueling him or being a deterrent for him. Because that has been the real, like, hot angle of AEW's last 6 months. And I very much assume that it still will be when we continue this and Hangman returns. But I'm interested because I don't feel the exact same fire just looking at the graphic of Swerve versus Joe that I did looking at the three-way for Revolution, and that's because Hangman's not there. So depending on when Hangman comes back, I think it could be very interesting to see what it does for Swerve and his momentum and such.
Now we're saying it. There's so many people I want to be the world champion, which is a great sign for a roster.
Yeah.
But I almost, now you've just been saying that, I want Hangman as the champion. And it, like, he would hold on to it so tightly, not just because he wants to be champion, but so Swerve can't be.
This was what we were saying before Revolution. If they wanted to have the Elite be Hangman and the Bucks with all the gold and have that be your heel Elite, heel Hangman champion, they could have done something with it. And I'm not going to say that they made the wrong move by doing what they did, but I very much agree. There's like six different guys that could all be world champion right now. And for this feud, oh, like I want Swerve and Hangman to once again, like I want them to main event Full Gear this year for the title. And at the start, I was thinking that Hangman wins back the title as this triumphant babyface for Full Gear. Now I almost want it to be the other way around.
Well, the Hangman wins it.
Well, that either Hangman is the one that finally takes it from Swerve, or that Swerve hasn't won it, that Hangman goes in as champion and Swerve beats him for it.
Like
there's
that.
So many different things. I'm assuming that Swerve's just going to win the title at Dynasty. I think Swerve and Ospreay would probably be my Wembley match for the world title. At that point, does Will win it? I don't know. We're getting too far sidetracked because that's a long way down the line. We got to get to this pay-per-view first. But like you said, it's a good problem to have a roster like this.
So this match, Takeshita, although he lost, spoiler, which was pretty predictable.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone was watching this for the chance Takeshita might win. We were watching this because it's going to be an excellent match.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really good. And Takeshita looks great even in defeat. I don't feel like either guy looks worse off or even the same coming out of this. They both look better. Takeshita hits this brainbuster early. And Swerve just goes down.
Yeah.
Doing this. And it's like this neck injury that's lost power in his arm. And that just really hooked me into that story. Just the body parts not working. And they had this back and forth match trading moves. But Takeshita was always coming off better, even when Strickland was hitting him with stuff,
mm-hmm.
because he just was lacking that bit of power because of that arm injury. I thought it was a really smartly worked match.
I thought so as well. I really liked a lot of the commentary in this match as well. I thought Don Callis does a very good job of putting over the other guy, even when it is like, he will say, oh, well, Takeshita is the best wrestler in the world, and obviously he's going to win this match, but my God, look at how good Swerve is. And then finally, once you get to like the last quarter of the match, that's when he's like, oh my God, no. And yeah. Then you really get to, you get the sense that the switch has been flipped,
yeah.
And now he's worried. And I think he does a really good job at that. I think it makes the match feel that much bigger. But he also did a really good job of pointing out just how smooth Swerve's movements are. And that's always been one of my favorite things about Swerve's wrestling is his transitions are totally unique because he is able to do so much more with his whole body. He uses his upper body to flip around and do stuff just as much as he does his legs. And I think it does set him apart in my mind for his particular style. And it works so well with someone who is, again, as crisp and dynamic as Takeshita.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were going to continue.
Well, I could keep gushing about this match. They had a kick out near the end where I think Swerve hits the Swerve Stomp and gets like a really close two count. And everyone thought that was the finish. And when Takeshita kicked out, he was like, oh my God, this match is still going. It's fantastic.
I thought it was a last call into the Swerve Stomp.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was like, oh, okay, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
But then when he kicked out, I thought, oh, okay, he's going to win with the sort of arm triangle thing he won with last week.
Right.
Getting over that submission move to take on Joe. But no, he hit the JML driver like sickly onto Takeshita's head. Probably because you don't want to make Takeshita tap out.
Big pressure, that move is now called.
Big pressure.
Mm-hmm.
The JML driver.
Yeah.
Oh.
Big pressure. I apply. Yeah, I swerve when I drive.
And yes, yeah, Swerve wins. And Joe's backstage, and he tells Renee that Swerve isn't that man, and they're going to have a contract signing next week.
I cannot wait. Mm-hmm. This was a fantastic main event. I thought this does a lot for Swerve in that his role on this show was top babyface, wins the number one contender shot in just a great match. No bells and whistles, just your star power. You go out there. You're the focus of the show. And to me, I think he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. Definitely. And Takeshita looked great too. I mean, and you've also got this bookend structure of here's Ospreay having this great story and match in the opener. Here's Swerve. It does feel like when these two paths collide, it's going to be really cool.
They're on a bit of a parallel right now, it feels like. And that makes me very excited.
Overall, I gave it 75%, which is pretty low by Dynamite standards. But, you know, to my tastes, this was great standard wrestling. This feels like such a weird complaint.
I would give this like a 4 out of 5. Yeah. Like it to me was great wrestling, but I like that more than most. So this show ticked all of my boxes, even if we didn't have, you know, a bunch of great in-ring promos or angles or whatnot. I was not disappointed one bit with any of the matches we got.
Before we get into our remaining Omega chats, let's say a very big thank you to our wonderful Pledge Hammers. No, they're not the Pledge. There's one Pledge Hammer. And then the rest are mods. And they're all equally loved in our eyes. So thank you, the Magic Man, Barry Blaine.
Yeah. And the mods, Andy.
Harry.
Ian.
James.
Jenny.
John.
Les.
Rob.
Yeah.
And because she doesn't put herself on there, the mod mother, Jenna.
Woo!
Thank you very much. We couldn't do this without our wonderful mods. and all their Mudiclorians, give them some cheap pops in the comments. They keep the chat nice.
They're
because you're all
the,
so rowdy sometimes, aren't you?
The unsung heroes of this whole thing. They keep us moving, keep us vibing.
And also, if you are a Pledgehammer on Patreon or not, go over there because the latest episode of mine and Luke's Wrestle Talk Extra series, it's the third episode going into 2014 WWE, focusing on the breakup of the Shield, is live. It went up on Wednesday, and which is yesterday, and it includes Blue Tista.
Mm. The only, I swear, I think that's like one of two things I remember about that show. It's that and the Last Man Standing match.
We'll just do these two chats that were missed from Tuesday's Raw review. The Last Quincy says, with how great every segment with The Rock always is since he turned heel, it makes me wish they let Jay and Jimmy Uso's feud be tied in with The Rock because he would have made their ice-cold feud legit hot.
I can't disagree. Of all these things, this Uso thing on WrestleMania, I do not care about.
Yeah.
And, I mean, The Rock... Granted, I would very much like to see this main event of WrestleMania, Cody Rhodes versus The Rock, but we're not getting that either. But I think The Rock being injected into anything right now would give it a little bit more fire.
I think Rikishi.
Yeah.
Put Rikishi in there. Rikishi can be like, I did this for you.
That's very good. I've always said that we need to get more extended bloodline people in there for these type of things, but hey-o.
The Heated One. I was there live last night. They're talking about Raw still. And what you all saw on TV does not do it justice on how loud it was. You just felt something special was going to happen. I literally don't have a voice today. Thank you guys for these awesome videos you all do of WrestleTalk. Thank you. I watched like 4 minutes of that Rock beatdown segment, but it was from the crowd because it was uncensored and you can listen to the naughty swear words. And yeah, it's just like, you can hear the crowd go, people were so into it. It's awesome. Ekerto says, I feel it's good that there is a slow burn with the Monet story, given that both Okada and Will are having a more fast-paced burn. It would feel too much of the same thing, in my opinion. Also, quitting Twitter 3 months ago was the best decision ever. For me, AEW has been really good all year long, not just the last couple of weeks. Finally, the women's division is getting more stories that are not only for a title, but outside of it. In my opinion, the women's story are better in AEW right now than WWE.
Interesting. I mean, I don't know if I can say that with the Bayley stuff going on SmackDown with Io Sky. I do think that is one of the best stories going in WWE going into WrestleMania. But I will say that I do think that the AEW women's division has been given more this year than they had been previous. I am very happy to see that, you know, Thunder Rosa is starting to come up and join the women's title picture and stuff like that, because we were wondering when that was going to happen after a few weeks on Collision of racking up wins and such. I do think that without Okada and Will having as good a start as they would, I think Mercedes' kind of slow start would be a lot more of an issue without those two things. Yeah. But I'm a little more forgiving given what else is on the show.
I'll agree with you as well that from the start of this year, I think AEW been putting on excellent TV.
Yeah.
Like back to the quality of, you know, early 2022 was the last time they did this. Homer Star says, hey guys, what are some early predictions of matches you'll think we'll see at All In? If they're both healthy enough, I think a Cole-MJF rematch would be great. I'd love to see Jamie Hayter, but according to reports, she's nowhere near ready to return yet.
That's mad.
I haven't read those reports.
No, neither have I, because though we were booking, you know, the Fantasy All In card, you know, in the office a few weeks ago, and I mean, the obvious ones are like, you know, Omega and Okada and stuff like that, if that's the direction we're going to go here. But, my goodness, if all things are to be believed, maybe you do the Young Bucks and the Motor City Machine Guns. I think that could be really fun. Uh-huh. I think we see Nigel.
I was going to say Nigel
and Danielson.
Yeah.
Because I think we would have gotten that last year if Danielson wasn't hurt. And it does just, it drives the knife into my heart a little bit.
McGuinness, I think he posted on somewhere the other day that he's got back, training feels good or something.
Yeah.
Have you seen him do the magic trick to Will Ospreay?
I don't know if I've seen him do a magic trick to me, but no.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same one.
There's just a clip online of him doing the, like, sapping all the strength from Dustin Rhodes and Will Ospreay, and they can't pick up this small woman.
Huh.
And Ospreay's like, bruv, what?
Very good.
Jock Will J again. Not sure if this has been discussed, but what do you see being the major anarchy in the arena blood and guts feud for Double or Nothing? The build tends to happen from Revolution. There are many factions, but none are really feuding right now. What do you two think?
I don't know if we need one. Like, we've kind of ended up with the stadium stampede, anarchy in the arena things happening at Double or Nothing the last few years, and maybe it's like it's their version of like, oh, well, War Games time. Let's start faction warfare. And this year we just kind of don't really have it, because I remember people saying months ago that it was going to be Undisputed Kingdom against the Bang Bang Gang or whatever. And I was like, that sounds awful. I don't want to see the acclaimed Billy Gunn in this thing at all. But now with a few more horses coming in, I think that a women's blood and guts match is actually a bit of a possibility now, and I would be very excited to see it.
Welcome to Rome. Tell me if I'm off the mark here, but I feel that AEW tends to have the better in-ring work but poorer promos and stories, while WWE has great promos and stories but meh in-ring wrestling most of the time, but not all the time. Hashtag Monet do something.
I don't know if I can agree that AEW has worse promos than WWE. I think that there is definitely a trend at the moment where you're getting to see guys like The Rock, and, you know, Drew McIntyre's cutting the best promos of his career, and
CM Punk's
cutting promos, and there is a lot of good promo work being done. And granted, over in the AEW side of things, guys like MJF are off TV right now, so maybe this is just like a last couple of months thing, but promos have gotten a lot better across the board. Throw in Juice Robinson, get him back on TV, get MJF back on TV. Guys like Hangman and Kenny are really good talkers. There's loads of good promos to be found all over the place. So let's have them all on TV at the same time.
Yeah, I think that dynamic you've just described probably works for this week.
Yeah.
But overall, particularly like AEW's 5 years in existence, whatever it is, the better promos and wrestling matches have both been there.
Right. I mean, Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley haven't been on TV as of late. And those two alone can usually dwarf anybody in wrestling.
Stephen Miller, Memberg for 1 month. Thank you for joining. Love it here at WrestleTalk. Who do you guys personally think Santana was referencing in his Chris Van Vliet interview about returning to WWE? So this is, he said that he always thought Cody was going to go back, and he knows another, or he feels like another person who used to be in WWE is also waiting to go back.
I just, based off of connections and such, I would probably say Jericho.
That's what I thought as well, because he seems to be talking about someone who was there from the day dot.
Yeah.
So it's not Malakai Black.
No. And, I mean, those are the kind of names that keep coming up, like your Malakais, your Miros, your whoever. And, like, maybe it is one of them, but at this point, 4 years ago, I would have said, like, oh, Jericho's never going back to WWE. He's going to enjoy doing his wrestling his way and such. But I would have said the same thing about Cody.
Yeah.
And we've seen what happens there.
John Miller. Hey, guys. Dynamite has really been on a hot streak this last month. I'm going to my first wrestling show this Saturday for Collision. Can't wait to see the Copeland, Shibata and Danielson live. Any tips for first-time showgoers?
Don't be that guy. That's my advice. Never be that guy at the wrestling show.
Yeah. Always trying to get your... Don't try and get yourself over.
Yeah. If you go and you start chanting Savio Vega at any show that's not Backlash from last year, I dislike you as a human. Also, wear deodorant. It sucks that it needs to be said, and I'm sure you would have, but you just got to make sure.
And also, get to the merch stand in a match that you're not interested in. Because AEW's merch stand situation isn't plentiful. Those queues can back up for quite a way. So if you really want some merch, you know, do a recce, have a look at the t-shirts that are on sale, and then get in there Maybe at the start of a match you're not that into. Blake Whitehouse says, Luke. Oh, okay. Right, we're in the section about the Steinemath bot. It's listed here as propaganda. We're doing reports into it. It's not propaganda. Blake Whitehouse says, Luke, I understand how you feel about the pipe bomb versus Steinemath promo controversy. It's like Empire Strikes Back versus Revenge of the Sith. Empire is the better movie, yes, but Revenge of the Sith is the movie I would rather watch. Ollie, you just don't realise that fun is better than good. Well, I'm sorry about your standards there, Blake. EJO says, with Luke and Ollie debating over Steinemath versus Pipe Bomb, I realized I would love to see a WrestleTalk debate show, two or three WrestleTalk crew debating fun wrestling topics while someone, possibly Pete, adjudicates. What do you guys reckon? Love your guts. Well, you know, fun is what you've put there. Fun wrestling topics. I don't think the math versus Pipe Bomb debate is fun. It's getting quite toxic for me, actually. And I want to draw a line under it. And the line is Pipe Bomb is definitively better. What do you think?
I think we have had some discussions amongst various people about different types of shows with a format like that. Don't want to give any false hope or anything. Nothing is imminent or nothing. But we have spoken about it.
Power Packers 19 member for 31 months. What a run. The streak. You know they say... You know that they say... Though I'm not going to read that. You can read that.
You know they say that all promos are created equal. But you look at Steinemath and you look at the Pipe Bomb and you can see that that statement is not true.
Very witty. Didn't know Chris Grace was here. And thank you, Richard Storrs, for becoming a new member. Now, please do. Yeah, the poll for the ratings of Dynamite. A poll of quality, of course.
It is 64% up, 29% mid, 7% down.
Hopefully you heard all of that. There's another poll going on right now. I encourage you all to go over to WrestleTalk's YouTube page on the community tab section. We've got a poll running. It's asking what is objectively the better promo of all time in wrestling. Is it Steinemath's or is it CM Punk's Pipe Bomb? Do the right thing. Do the right thing. That's all I'm asking you to do. Vote for the Pipe Bomb. Have a happy Easter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.